Where do you go for comics new and old?
Garage sales?
Wrong! Where do you see your favorite television and movie stars?
In magazines, mostly.
Wrong again! And where do you go to see the best in cosplay?
Well, there are lots of different options if you're looking for something...
So incredibly wrong! Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World Comic Con offers live entertainment and gaming, comics new and old, cosplay, toys and memorabilia, and a chance to meet your favorite television and movie stars. Meet Doctor Who star David Tennant and Lord of the Rings star Elijah Wood June 1st through the 3rd in Des Moines, Iowa. Then meet Aquaman Jason Momoa and Luke Cage's Mike Coulter June 8th through the 10th in Columbus, Ohio. For news, celebrity updates, and tickets to future shows, go to wizardworld.com. Don't feel like paying full price? No problem. Use promo code CANDARE at checkout to get 10% off your tickets. So, where are you going to go for your pop culture fix?
The internet?
Oh, good answer.
Really?
No! Wizard World Comic Con!
Go to wizardworld.com for tickets.
Well, hello out there, everybody. This is Winnie the Pooh.
And Tigger, too. And also some guy named Jim Cummings. You're not going to believe this, but you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast. Good job. Keep it up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
And I'm Jake Runyon.
We have a good show lined up here for you today.
Do.
We do have a guest today, but they're going to be joining us a little bit later in the episode. Back to talk about his comic, Geek Girl, which just released the first issue of its second miniseries. We're going to be welcoming Sam Johnson back to the show from the UK. Always love talking to Sam. It's a great comic. And I really like the direction they're going with it now.
Yeah, he's
it was not what I was expecting.
He's not pulling any punches, you know?
No.
He's letting it become what it's going to become.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's the seed of something bigger to come.
I just realized what an inane statement I just made, but I mean it. Like, it's growing into something very interesting,
sure.
And it's clear it's moving in the direction he wants it to, so
sure.
That's awesome.
Right, exactly. So we'll be welcoming him to the show a little bit later, but first... In our retro roundtable, Jake had the idea in lieu of not only Solo, but Deadpool in its own right, both kind of being spinoffs to other stories. We're going to be talking best spinoffs in general on movies.
Seemed like a natural
television. I even have some video game stuff here. So,
I hadn't even thought about games. That's fertile ground.
Yeah, it's a good category. I'm surprised we haven't done it earlier. So that's what we'll be doing there. And then in our comic vault, what do we got, Jake?
This week, I want to talk about Bloodborne, one of my favorite things of all time. Something that's gone from, like, my favorite video game.
Is this a spinoff of, or is that the name of the video game as well?
That's the name of the game as well. And it's made the jump into the comic world. So I don't know. They just need a movie, and they'll have me covered on all entertainment bases, I guess.
Okay, very cool. I'll be talking once again about Tina Fey's Off-Girl. It's something I talk about often on the show, but, you know, that's it kind of comes with the Patreon deal. She's a Patreon backer, and that's our payment.
It's worth talking about, so...
It's a great book. It's a great book, and I'm not just saying that because she is a backer. But, again, we'll be touching on that a little bit later, and then we'll be welcoming Sam to the show. But before we do all that, Jake.
Social networking. More important today than ever, especially because that's how we get the word out. And I know you guys, being the loyal fans you are, you want to spread the word as much as you can. So head on down to Twitter. We are at Canned Air Pod. Like, follow, subscribe, share our things, and we'll share yours. It's a nice system of mutual benefit we got going on there. Then skip on over to Instagram, where we are at canned_air. Do the same thing. To hell with it. And one of these days, Instagram will allow clickable links. God help me, that is the biggest thorn in my side, but the links are there as well if you're willing to copy and paste. Just head down to Instagram. I'll have funny images for you at least to make up for the lack of interactivity. And if you like what we do, Patreon people, and we'd like to thank our most recent Patreon backer as well, because...
That's exactly what I was going to say next.
Yeah, it's always nice to see that this is moving in the right direction, and you know, slow progress is still progress.
Yeah.
We're super grateful for everyone who likes the show enough to contribute, so thanks very much, and we would encourage all of you out there, if you like the show, please follow suit. Doesn't have to be much. Throw a couple of bucks a month our way, and it goes a long, long way, much further than you'd think. And if you reach that $5 a month mark or more, you have access to our Patreon-exclusive podcast, so a little extra show to brighten your day.
And a big thanks to our most recent founder, instead of backer, as we call them. Randy Hardenbrook, he's become, once again, a new Patreon backer, and just seems to be very passionate about the show. He really likes it and wants to support it, and it's
awesome to see.
It's very awesome to see, and it makes us feel good. I'm glad it's reaching people, and we're hearing stuff back. So big thank you to Randy, and look forward to having him as a founder and working with them to polishing this turd of a show up to something a little bit better than
Just crush it now. Into a cubic zirconium.
All right, well, with that behind us, let's just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Do it. Do it!
Come on!
I'm here!
Come on! Do it now!
Oh, my God! It killed Kenny! Faster!
Grass tastes bad!
I want to talk spinoffs, Jeremy.
Let's do it.
Crazy, huh? Spinoffs.
Spinoffs. So we've...
There's a thing, and then... Whoa.
We're not going to be talking about Solo, because neither of us have seen it.
Right. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't really be
I'm going...
Although that is kind of the impetus for the subject.
Yeah, but I think it's a statement to the Star Wars being shoved down our throat and up our ass. So, you know...
It's meeting in the middle, right?
I'll see it somewhere. Just not now.
Yeah.
It's too early for
me. I got shit to do, man.
Yeah, and too many other movies I'd rather see more coming out. It's too expensive to go to the movies, but I'll see it at some point or another. So, favorite spinoff?
Well, I'm going to have to lean... See, this is one of the things that comes to mind right off the bat. But at the same time, it feels like a little bit of a cop-out. Because there's so many Marvel movies you could consider a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost think of, like, at least in terms of the way he was introduced, I'd almost think of Black Panther as a spinoff. And the way the character, you know, hit the scene in, well, that was Civil War, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and then it felt to me like a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta lean toward Black Panther as something that just kind of jumps out at me. Something that took, I would say, the framework of a character that was already working really well. And just fleshed out perfectly.
Sure. And, you know, I liked it much better than Civil War.
Yeah.
Too. Civil War is a decent movie.
It's good, but I feel like in Civil War, some of the things I really loved about the whole Avengers concept broke down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the climax didn't feel too climactic to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It just wasn't that great. But not to say it wasn't a good movie.
No,
I really enjoyed
it.
Just in the scape of the Marvel movies, not one of the better.
No.
I'm really excited for Venom. You know, speaking of spinoff movies. And I'm even more excited now because it's been reported that Tom Holland was on set.
Oh, cool.
So, but they're saying he's not going to be playing Spider-Man, but just Peter Parker.
Nice.
So,
because the whole Eddie Brock Peter Parker dynamic—that's an important part of it.
Yeah, I don't see how you could do it.
You couldn't just ignore it.
So it'll be cool. I mean, think of Tom Holland and think of what's his name?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, next to each other. I mean, what a perfect Peter and Eddie combo right there. So
it's an amazing cast.
It would be cool to see that Venom somehow come into the next Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they've done their first Spider-Man movie. Now there's a Venom movie. Now I'm aware that the Venom movie is more of a Sony Pictures release, so than it is an actual Marvel Studios release. But it still has the Marvel banner, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the way they, you know, the deal they kind of have with Spider-Man, you know, he's still Sony property, but Marvel can use him. I wonder if that will bleed Venom into the next Spider-Man
movie. I sure
hope
so.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Venom's been one of my favorite characters since I was a kid. I always loved
you and so many.
I love Venom more than I liked Spider-Man when I was younger.
Yeah, he's so cool.
And I always liked that...
And anybody can be him, too. You don't have to be bitten by a spider, radioactive spider. All you have to do is find the symbiote.
If you're
anyone
in the right
him.
Place at the right time, you are Venom.
Yeah.
You know? And I always liked... I don't know how... Often it's represented in the comics, or I know in a game I've played, Ultimate Spider-Man, there were playable Venom portions. I always liked that with Venom, the physicality was front and center. He had this sort of brutish strength about him, whereas Spider-Man was the more lithe, nimble sort of figure. That's one of the things they kind of screwed up in Spider-Man 3, I think, is Venom was just slim, dark Spider-Man. But
yeah,
you look at Venom, he's this hulking thing. You know, he doesn't even, like, web swing across the place. He just fucking jumps and lands where he needs to be. You know, he's one of those characters that's like a product of his own thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see that represented, you know, with a real focus on that whole thing.
The symbiote can just read his mind and tell what he wants to do without him having to make, you know, like, I feel like there's been times where, like, he's been web swinging, like, holding something with both hands. It just
happens.
It just knows. Yeah. It just is, like, coming off his shoulders or out his back to get him to where he needs to go.
It's awesome.
That's what I love about that trailer, too, when the guys storm his apartment and you just see, like, his arm, like, throwing out the window, out his back, out of his chest, and, like...
The symbiote is assuming control now.
No, why would we do something like that? I mean, I am so pleased with that trailer.
Oh,
I can't even tell you.
Isn't it, I think Lance Reddick is the voice of the symbiote?
I'm not even sure who that is.
I probably should, though. He's got a fucking phenomenal voice. I'm trying to think. You ever see The Wire? HBO series?
No.
Did you see John Wick?
No. As Keanu Reeves.
Shit. Oh, you forgot you don't like Keanu Reeves? I like Keanu. Well, point of the matter is, the guy they got for it, I believe, has just a phenomenal voice, and I couldn't be more excited for that casting, so.
I mean, I heard what it sounds like, and it does sound amazing.
It sounds great, yeah.
Yeah, so bringing that element into it as well, something they didn't do.
Because the symbiote's a character.
Right.
You've got to represent that. In Spider-Man 3, it was just a monster.
Yeah.
That's it. It just shrieked, and who cares?
There was no conflict between Topher Grace and and the symbiote.
Oh my God, what a weird casting.
I know. Tell me about it. Like, there's nothing about him that says Eddie Brock.
I don't despise Topher Grace. I just...
I've heard he's quite an asshole in real life.
Oh, is he really?
I've heard so, yeah.
That has an effect.
No, that doesn't mean anything. I guess he could be the nicest guy you ever come across.
Yeah.
He could be. But I don't know why I would have heard that so many places.
But Tom Hardy's the right pick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could only be more excited about this movie's casting if they brought J.K. Simmons back as Jameson.
That would be incredible.
He's so fucking good. It's not even fair that...
You know, and maybe that's a good thing for this Venom movie also, is to be continuing along the Spider-Man story into the next Spider-Man movie. Because that's one thing I really resented, is no involvement of the Daily Bugle or Jameson.
Yeah.
Or any of the stuff that we know, you know, from the
comic
series or past movies.
Those are integral to the
thing. Yeah.
You're missing an entire half of the Spider-Man character.
And I feel they did the same thing in the Andrew Garfield movies, too. There wasn't any Daily Bugle there either.
It was just missing. It just wasn't fleshed out.
He was just like a hipster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of missed the mark.
And I know
that Peter Parker
comes a little later, too, in his story a lot of cases, because it starts with him in high school and college and then trying to make it on his own. But still, it's such an important part. And Jameson himself is such a
He's such a great character.
I mean, he's the he's an antagonist without really meaning to be. You know,
right.
He causes his own damage from his high tower in the middle of New York there just by printing words.
He's a spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's this self-contained little disaster. And I don't know. He's just a treat.
He's the control stick of New York's opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Of Spider-Man.
It all filters through him.
So he's a good antagonist in that right.
Yeah.
But sometimes can be a good protagonist.
Sure.
I've seen him join up with Spider-Man
before.
One
of the strengths of the character. So I really hope there's no way they can ignore it.
Yeah.
In this. And I'm thrilled for that movie.
Yeah. Because that first trailer did not make me excited. I was like,
God. I remember we were talking about it, and I remember you weren't thrilled, mm-hmm. but I was like cautiously optimistic. I was like, the way they're spinning it had a very kind of menacing vibe. I thought if they handle this the right way.
It just looked like a werewolf movie to me, kind of that first trailer.
Oh, I hadn't
just
thought about that.
Kind of on the full moon, it takes
it's
over and just kind of does its own thing. But no. The second trailer showing you, no, we're doing what the comic shows you, not only in appearance, but with the alter egos,
and
the way
about
he
the appearance,
wields it.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh. I was so
the way it just
kind of
came over his head like a hood and closed the gnarled teeth.
That was exactly what I needed to see.
I can't wait to see a shot of the chest. I want to see the insignia. I want to see.
Yep.
But see, that's something I feel like they need to explain by it having attached itself to Spider-Man first, because why else would it be replicating this spider image? I mean, just coincidence?
Who knows, man?
Anyway.
You could pull the Man of Steel thing. It's like, oh, it's the symbol that stands for freedom. Like, this symbol stands for eating innocence, you know?
Well, here, it's a ripoff of my symbol. So, anyway, spinoff.
I want to talk about a spinoff that hasn't happened yet. And when I say yet, I say that hopefully, almost desperately. Because I think we've mentioned it once or twice on the show. Give me the Palpatine movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I need. You're going to make a Star Wars prequel? That's the character I want to see.
You know, it's funny when that was mentioned. I think we first mentioned that in the James Rolfe episode when he was on.
Yeah, we did.
To talk about Star Wars. And the excitement in his voice from
he was down
that,
too.
He was like, oh, dude! You know, like, it's such a good idea. It's such a good idea. I think it'd be difficult to do.
It would, but that's one of the things that would make it great. It'd be a challenging thing to do with
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of a challenge, they haven't been great sometimes with getting the best of directors. I mean, I guess I'm just thinking episode 8 mainly, but
which is a shame because I like that director, but I don't know. He let me down.
It was not good. But yeah, because it would have to be more than just him starting as a young Jedi apprentice and then being wrong. There would have to be...
It's too easy.
I feel like it's too dark a move for Disney to do. But it's... Oh, it needs to be done.
If they play that Darth Maul, Palpatine, Savage Opress lightsaber fight scene on a two-hour loop in the theater, I'll give them a standing ovation at the end.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. Just make him that cool for a little bit on the big screen, please.
Well, speaking of spinoffs that we want to see, I would love to see a Hit Girl spinoff from Kick-Ass.
It would make perfect sense.
No, I mean, they did so in the comic. They did it in the comic realm.
Yeah.
And those have been rewarding. But, I know her story goes into her adult years where she still is wearing, you know, still being Hit Girl.
Sure.
So, you know, seeing her as deadly as she was as a child,
you
can
imagine
as an adult with the experience under her belt, you know, she has to be damn near unstoppable. And I would love to see a movie of her in adulthood. And, you know, I don't know the name of the girl who played her originally. But
Chloe Moritz? Something.
But she did really good, I thought. And she's grown into quite the cutie. And I think she would do good still.
No question.
Doing that character in her adult years. It would be really cool to see.
Would.
Anyway, any more?
Video game spinoffs.
Yeah.
I figure let's touch on that a little bit, because it's one of those things where I think it's less common than in movies. It's almost an accepted practice that if you have a setting that works in a game, you want to milk it. Like, people come back to the shit they're obsessed with. And one of the ones that comes to mind that I think of as kind of a misfire personally is we've all played Halo in our day.
Uh-huh.
You know, fallen out of fashion.
Played Halo, lived Halo.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I'd like to imagine a lot of our audience has done the same. And, one of the things that really felt right about Halo is that you are a super soldier.
Right.
Because you jump high, you hit hard, your aim is almost perfect, you're shielded, you're tough, you're heroic. And that's a big important part of the vibe. You're the man who's turning the tide of the war. That's a huge deal. And then there was Halo ODST.
Yeah.
Conceptually, I'm down. The drop troopers were very cool. I always liked that concept.
Yeah.
The hell jumpers or whatever they're called. I love that idea. And you see it in a lot of sci-fi settings. You know, the rapid response shock assault unit of some faction or another. I love that. You know, the heart, almost like the Rough Riders, you know, just like when shit gets real, you drop them behind enemy lines and you cause disruption. But playing it, you miss that crucial super soldier element. Because now you're tough as nails, sure, but you're just a dude.
Not only that, I mean, what happened with that game, in my opinion, was, like you're saying, it's a strong concept and could go a long way. Because it goes from being just a superhero game to more of like a Rainbow Six vibe where it's team-based, you know, squad kind of. You have to rely on your teammates and you have to take your time with this one. which I can get behind. Sure. I don't always like to just run and gun. I like to do strategic, you know, maneuvering through these situations.
Absolutely.
But the thing that makes the Halo games great, or made them great,
is that they're not tactical or strategic. They're
Not only that. I mean, again, it's a different game. But I guess what kept it interesting is the landscape. You were never bored with the landscape. I mean,
that's
not only
point.
In multiplayer. You know, I still remember Blood Gulch from the first Halo. Like the back of my hand, I could tell you where the bumps in the ground are, yeah. where the little hills are you can climb.
Get a Blood Gulch tattoo, for Christ's sake.
Seriously, think of the first Halo, the snow worlds. Climbing into those great big, I don't remember what they're called now, but climbing the different tiers of those big temples to get in there and unlock certain things. Or, you know, escaping the exploding ship at the very end of the game. Very memorable moments where ODST... 90% of the game,
dense urban.
You were
fighting,
just
right?
in like downtown area, like going city block to city block. And when I think
like
back,
Stalingrad, the game.
Yeah, when I think back on that game, the only memory I have is like of just being like on a city block, walking down the street.
Like, where do I go?
The best part of that game was in the multiplayer. They added
the firefight mode.
Is that the one where just waves of enemies come on? Yeah, there was this one level where there was a base plopped right down in this big open. Just kind of like flat, deserty looking area, and just waves of grunts and elites would come. It was awesome to fortress up in that thing. And
I love that. I remember Gears of War had a horde mode that was similar, where you'd find a spot and you'd fortify, and it has that Alamo vibe.
Yeah.
You know, just they're coming in from all angles. And, it's the best.
What else? There's another game. One of the last Call of Duty games I bought had an amazing mode like that. I can't remember which one it was.
I know the zombies mode has been really popular with their games.
It wasn't a zombie mode. It was just like a multiplayer, just waves of bad guys coming in. But, you know, being able to set up turrets, you know, the more you kill, you can just, like you say, and set your nest up of artillery.
Yeah,
and just bring them on. But anyway, speaking of video games, there's a bad one that I think is followed by what I think to be a good one. I think is debatable with a lot of different gamers, but Luigi spinoffs, you know, from Mario.
Yeah.
The first that I can remember is Mario is Missing, which is horrible. Because, you know, we've said on the show before, you're tricked into this game thinking, a Mario adventure just with Luigi, and that's not the case.
No, it's a history lesson.
It's a history lesson. Like, what the fuck? I go to school for this kind of crap.
Right.
Not, I don't go to video games for this kind of crap. And, I know years later, you know, there are game developers, a lot of which I saw yesterday at the Korg's Gaming Convention here in Hilliard, Ohio, who make custom games. And there have been people who have made whole, you know, side-scrolling Mario adventures with Luigi. Some of them are supposed to be ungodly impossible. But,
I would imagine. People love making their devastatingly hard Mario games.
Yeah, but it's crazy how big of a... genre that is, these custom games. Like yesterday I played Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles inside of Streets of Rage 2. They had a version of Sonic the Hedgehog, which I can't remember the way he described it, but once you die, you're in hell, and you're constantly outrunning the demonic version of yourself.
Jesus Christ.
And, like, you know, the opening, like, old-school Sonic the Hedgehog title screen on Sega, it's like him with his finger up. Yeah, this, like, had his eyes darkened with little red dots and pools of blood beneath him. It's crazy.
That is wonderful.
They just do whatever they want. But anyway, getting back to Luigi, the one spinoff that I rather enjoyed was Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah, because it was a genre switch, you know?
Right.
They did something different with it.
Well, it had like a Ghostbuster kind of vibe to it, you know.
It was the closest thing to like a full-on Ghostbusters game we'd had at that time. That played the way you'd want one to.
It was just a fun game. Good mystery-solving, puzzle-solving kind of game. Yeah. It was kind of slow-paced, I think. But,
right. A lot of exploration-heavy sort of plotting.
Sure. I enjoyed it, though. And then when they put it out for Wii U, that was even cooler. Because if you had like four people around... How was it? One person controlled Luigi on the big screen, and the other people were the ghosts on the small screen. So only Luigi on the big screen could see himself, but, you know, on your little screens, the ghost could see everyone.
Right.
And, you know, you had to try to get up on him without him turning around and putting a flashlight on you. It was so much fun. It was a great spinoff. And now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, every Mario spinoff has been great. Kart, Mario Kart, Party.
Mario Tennis, I used to love.
Mario Tennis, holy cow, yeah.
Smash Brothers. The ultimate fucking spinoff, right?
That first one on 64, I can't even tell you how much I played that game.
I think I probably played it until the cartridge melted.
Captain Falcon became an extension of me. Like, he was a body part.
I am Captain Falcon.
And it's funny, because when the second one came out for GameCube, I was just all as much about that one. But I figured I would still be a Captain Falcon guy, and I wasn't. I turned into a Samus person in that game.
Because there's, like, nothing she can't handle. It's just about a great character. Every range.
That and the Zelda character, or the Link character, I don't remember.
Link was always my go-to.
Yeah.
And then when they brought Zelda in, she was cool, because she could swap between Zelda and Sheik. And she'd be like the fast ninja, or like the range spellcaster. Uh-huh. And that was always cool.
There was another... another Roy and...
Marth and Roy.
Yes, Marth.
Yeah, they were from Fire Emblem. I never really played any Fire Emblem.
I didn't either, but Marth was a... He was my go-to. Cool. He was a powerhouse, for sure.
I liked Ganondorf. He was my favorite. Because he had Captain Falcon's moveset, but he was just slow.
He was too slow for me, though. Yeah.
Once I got used to it, I couldn't go back to anyone else.
If you were playing with somebody who was good at the game and you weren't fast enough, dude... But I don't know, if you know the character well enough, I guess it doesn't matter.
I'm pretty stoked for the new one. I think everyone is.
I tell you what I'd be pretty stoked for. The Marvel spinoff we've all been waiting on, Black Widow.
Dude.
No, I was just kidding. Oh. I don't want to see that at all. But why do people give that so much thought and so much...
I think because they could make it like a good espionage sort of thing. It'd have a cool... Neo-Cold War kind of feel, if they did it right.
At this point, you would have to, like, go all the way back and tell her pre-story, right?
Oh, that's true,
I mean, I don't think you could start her individual stories now.
And be a little weird. Yeah, does she have any villains that are uniquely hers?
I don't know. She might. I'm sure she probably does. And, you know, she's got an interesting enough story, but being this late in the game, I just feel like it's, like,
yeah, maybe lost, they kind of missed the shot.
Missed the chance, yeah. But she was I liked her character much. I watched Iron Man 2 again recently, and I rather enjoyed her character in that.
I don't think she's ever better than when she was in Iron Man 2.
No, she was... Oh, that scene at the end where her and Jon Favreau go in that hallway, and like, he spends his time beating the hell out of one guy, and she's just...
she's cleared the building. Yeah.
That was so cool.
That's the best.
Yeah.
And I think... Look, this is... I'm sure a lot of people will cry foul at this, but... I think Black Widow works best as a supporting character, and the more you put the spotlight on her, the more it kind of fades away, because she doesn't have, you know, her own set of superpowers. It's just an incredible level of skill and dedication to the cause. And you see that front and center in Iron Man 2.
Right.
And she gets these little moments where she can be really badass, and you go like, yes, hell yes, Black Widow, cool as shit. But the more you try and fit her into the team of super beings, the more out of place she looks.
Not only that, but it's like her attitude changed. She seemed to be very business oriented in those first movies, and now we just get in a lot of like this. I don't know. I feel like they're trying to inflict some kind of like noir. Help me say what I'm trying to say, because I don't know how to say what I'm trying to say.
I think they've kind of softened her up too much. She's become like this quippy sort of like, oh, she's got something snide to say.
Yeah, like her training that she had so long ago, I mean, kind of suppressed like any like love or, you know, I mean, she's like, she's an assassin. She's all business, right? I mean, whether or not she's doing it for good or bad, I would imagine that mindset would kind of, I don't know.
Sure. We were talking about this before we started recording. They did to her what I'm glad they didn't do to Doctor Strange, and that's round off the edges. Right. Doctor Strange is a dick.
Yeah.
In Infinity War, he's still a dick. Mm-hmm. And it's because he has to be. You know, his job kind of necessitates being an asshole. And I'm glad they didn't soften the punch on that one.
Right.
Whereas Black Widow, I think maybe with fan reception, people have been so frothing at the mouth for her, they've had to make her more accessible, maybe.
This is true. I don't know. I guess so. She's got to be the... I mean, I know they have Scarlet Witch, but aside from Black Widow, she's the female heroine, you know, in the...
I prefer Scarlet Witch, personally.
I don't know. My problem with Scarlet Witch is, like, whenever I see her doing her finger thing...
Oh, that is a little overdone.
It just really pulls me out of it, because all I can think of is, like, them going, and action. fingers.
And you can almost feel the green screen.
Yeah. I don't know. Or like when she's... Well, I think it was in this movie, where in Infinity War, where she puts her hand in front of his stone and she's doing her finger thing.
Yeah, like, ooh.
They're injecting too much of that stuff for my like. I mean, I don't know. If they keep her character around with Vision and they introduce the X-Men, one thing they would have to do is House of M, where she changed all reality. She like had some mental breakdown and she was like creating a perfect life around her, where her and Vision were married with children, but the effects of it had on everyone else. It's been a long time and I never made it completely through the story, but I mean, that seems like a logical way to go with Marvel Studios.
If they can pull that off, it's the right move.
Well, I know that, you know, obviously Disney has just acquired or is in the process of purchasing 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
Which would then be them getting the X-Men back.
Right.
Can you imagine a reboot of the X-Men in Marvel?
I sure can.
It would be cool.
Yeah. Speaking of which...
Don't get me wrong. I like those old X-Men movies. Oh, yeah.
I want to see a spinoff of a spinoff. Give me Cable.
Ooh.
Because I was so down with that character. Let's see Cable and Deadpool. They're planning on that, right? They're slated for...
If they would just... you mean plan on a Cable movie?
A Cable and Deadpool movie.
Oh, are they?
I think so.
I mean, I imagine he's going to be a permanent character now, but
sure hope so.
I would think they would maybe do an X-Force movie. That would be tight to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
they've killed off everyone except Domino, who consistently surprised at how much I love Domino.
What a perfect character she was. She was best. So good.
I remember as soon as she was introduced, just her little back and forth with Deadpool as to whether Luck was a superpower. I was like, fuck. She's so charming. I'm stuck. It's like immediately I was like, yeah, she's good. She's good.
Yeah.
So more Domino, more Cable.
I wouldn't mind seeing a Domino movie.
Dude, absolutely.
I don't think we will, but...
No. It'd be hard to stretch her power set to...
Yeah, that whole gimmick would... there's only so many ways I think you could use the good luck thing. That'd take some handy writing, clever writing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know much about her. I mean, is that all she really is in the comics? I don't know.
I never got big into X-Force because the art style was so fucking repugnant to me, at least for the most part, that I just didn't care. But I think that's kind of the... I looked it up at one point, and they explained this whole luck concept as she's a mutant and a reasonably powerful one. But she doesn't have the same level of direct control over her powers that a lot of mutants have. She's like semi-telekinetic, and she can affect like causality, probability, and she subconsciously affects her environment, like remotely, in such a way that it benefits what she's doing. And
it appears like good luck. It appears like good luck, actually, just being.
Yeah, but what it is that when she sets her mind to do something, because the description said it was like participatory. If she's moving through, say, a crowded street, then her powers are manifesting in knocking shit over or blocking incoming vehicles in whatever way allows her to complete that goal.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying is right here on this Wikipedia. Subconscious telekinetic power or manipulation, excuse me, enhanced reflexes and agility, master marksmanship, and expert martial artist. So, yeah, I mean, it's got to be the telekinesis that's, like you're saying... Interesting take on it. I like that better than it just actually being a streak of good luck that, you know, is just as simple as, that's her power, she's got good luck. Well, where does it come from? It's just good luck.
She's lucky.
Just the best luck.
Yep.
Got a leprechaun in her pocket. But anyway,
go back to her home and walls are covered in dead leprechauns and she's burnt out.
Stealing the life force of everyone. Okay, here's another one. Where are we? We're about 33. Last one. Unless you've got another one.
No,
I always loved the show Cheers growing up and Frasier.
And then you get Frasier.
What a great spinoff that I think I rather enjoyed if not more than Cheers.
I watched a hell of a lot more Frasier than I did Cheers.
I've always been a sucker. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I had a recording device of some kind in my hand.
I
love the art of recording. And, you know, doing this show and him having his show on Frasier, I always, when I put this desk together, I always thought very much of that show and his whole recording setup. But too much of it on end. Like, I've got a DVD box set of it and was watching it before. And they're pretty, like, the chemistry to the episodes were pretty similar. Yeah. So if you watch too many of them back to back,
you get a little burnout.
You could call them a mile away. Yeah. You know? But such a good show. And yeah, those are characters I actually miss. I would love to see a reunion or something of them. That would be cool.
Hell, while we're on the subject, can we talk about, you know, for all their flaws, the early X-Men movies, how perfect Kelsey Grammer is as Beast?
Yeah.
Flawless.
Now, there is a spinoff movie,
Holy
dude.
Shit.
There's a spinoff movie.
Oh, I'd watch a Beast movie. Because he's got it all, right? He's conflicted. He's got motivations.
Oh, my God, dude. Kelsey Grammer in a Beast movie. Do you think he's too old for that?
Man? I don't know. I feel like he'd be game, though.
Oh, he would undoubtedly be game. He would do it. I love him.
I don't think he's
awesome.
Done much recently that would tie up his...
I don't know. I feel like there was something he has been doing a little more low-key, like where he was playing... What am I thinking of? Did he play like a president or something in the Expendables movie? Like he...
You know, I haven't seen an Expendables movie since the first one.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry.
Dude, they're so much fun. They're fun as shit.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I don't know. The other ones kind of slipped by me.
They're so corny in a refreshing way.
I'm down with that.
It's like... You're watching the young new recruit named Billy get killed. Like, Billy, no! Like, as corny
You're
as...
You're too beautiful for this world, Billy.
As corny as it all sounds, it's awesome in the same right. It's like, it fulfills something that hasn't been fulfilled since the 90s, 80s and 90s, you know?
I do kind of miss those days of just the super macho hero, you know?
You know, I just talked recently on the show, I don't know, last 10 episodes about having watched an old Van Damme movie that I have great memories of called Sudden Death. But,
How'd those memories hold up
for
you?
Oh, my God. When I watched it again just recently, I rented it from the library. It was a mess of a movie, but... And it was fun in that same right, but I like the way they've modernized it. Stallone's kind of modernized it with still keeping that
You
certainly
retro have
feel.
To. I guess you could almost think of The Expendables as a spinoff, not in a direct way, but a spinoff of that feel, that genre.
It's kind of like what, I don't know, I feel it's like what Scary Movie tries to do with, like, Scream, without the humor, without trying to be a smartass or be funny about it.
It's a celebration of the genre.
There you go. They're being respectful of what they're...
Yeah, weirdly enough, they do go about it. Because these are the guys who cut their teeth on this genre.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to be respected. They're going to revere this type of thing.
And, you know, pull all these powerhouses together into just a one big catamaran of manliness, you know?
It's so much fucking testosterone in them.
You just feel like you ought to be, like, lifting weights as you're watching it.
You walk out, suddenly you're covered in oil. Your biceps are bulging.
Well, you should cover up those oily, bulging biceps with a Candare t-shirt from Society6.com.
They're so absorbent and comfortable. Pod.
Yeah.
For sedentary or active lifestyles alike.
Or you can get one of those Candare towels from Society6.com/Candare.
Cover all your bases.
Yeah, and you could wipe the sweat from your biceps with a Candare towel.
Wonderful.
Then go out and put a Candare decal on your car, because we got them too.
Yeah. And then everyone will go like, wow, that guy has one thing that he likes a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then you can drink your protein shake out of a Candare mug, you know?
It's endless, basically.
Then you can go wash the douchiness off yourself in the shower behind a Candare shower curtain.
No aspect of your life is untouched by the possibility of Candare merch.
I didn't mean to imply anyone who lifts weights is a douche.
No.
That's not at all what I'm saying. But there are certain types out there who are douches who like to lift. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Anyway,
Society6/Candare Pod.
Society6.com/Candare Pod. Get that merch. And also go to wizardworld.com.
Yeah.
We have what now? The Wizard World Columbus show. Only a few days out from people hearing this, or if not happening. If you plan on going, type Candare, no space, in the promo box at checkout. Get your cool 10% off your tickets.
It's going to be awesome.
It already is awesome, Jake. Yeah. And also, at the Wizard World Columbus show, we have our own panel we're doing, a live show, our second one now. It's only going to be a 45-minute set, though. It's happening in room B241, whatever that means. We'll find out.
Your guess is as good as ours.
We'll find out where that is and what that means. But we're, you know, again, going to be doing about 45 minutes, probably just a retro roundtable. As 45 minutes isn't a lot of time to get into pop culture and comics.
But it's a perfect amount of time for a retro.
Yeah, but I think we can fit both within the retro somehow with all the comic movies that are out there. And we're also going to be raffling off some Deadpool-inspired prize packs. Some of them more Deadpool merch heavy than others.
Yeah.
But you're all going to get some comics in there.
It's going to be great.
And some minifigures. And there's all kinds of t-shirts, great big Marvel, what is it? Marvel Select Deadpool. He's really awesome looking. Yeah. I hate to give him away, but
kind of want to hold on to that one.
I would love to, but it'll be much cooler to see that glisten in someone's eye as they win it. So again, show up to, this is Sunday, the last day of the con, which is what? That'll be the 10th, June 10th.
Indeed.
In room B241 to not only watch your boys live, but for your chance to win a Deadpool prize pack.
It's going to be great.
Wizard World Columbus. Come check us out. All right. And with that, let's swing open the door to the comic vault. Jake, what do we got this week?
I want to talk about Bloodborne. All the time, just in general. But this week in particular, I want to talk about the Bloodborne comic.
Sure.
This came out semi-recently. It was a fairly recent development. So when they announced this Bloodborne comic, my first thought was, how? How are they going to pull this off? Because I know I've talked about Bloodborne, Dark Souls before on the show, but, you know, and I imagine a lot of the audience knows this already, but one of the hallmarks of the series is a vagueness in its storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of implication and subtle clues as opposed to things outright saying what they are. And I think, outside of some specific cases and certainly a lot of indie efforts, that's sort of contrary to the comic book experience. You know, when you're reading a comic book, you don't mind if the main character stops to, you know, wax expository on how a particular technology works or how they gain their powers. You like that shit. At least I do.
Right, I love
explanation.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes Marvel so much better than DC. I mean, I think DC explains, you know, like a lot of where their powers and how they work kind of stuff.
For the most part, it just comes down to magic.
But the way Marvel does it makes it seem
they ground it
like
very
legit.
Well.
Like the things that don't exist seem like they exist. And I think Batman has kind of a book like that where they not only show you the grappling gun, but they tear the grappling gun open and show you, you know, all the
nice
wheels and gears inside that thing and how it works. And it just adds a depth to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you can't really do that with the Bloodborne setting without diverging wildly
mm-hmm.
from one of the things that makes the series so great. And for the layman out there, Bloodborne is a game that's like ostensibly about hunting werewolves in a super grim gothic Victorian setting.
Right.
But as the game progresses, you realize the werewolves aren't the problem. They're a symptom of the bigger problem. And that's humanity meddling with these old gods and ancient cosmic forces. And this disease that turns people into ravening beasts is just one of the side effects. And in the Bloodborne comic, they really had to walk this tightrope. And I don't want to give too much of the story away, because I think the way they handle it is really adept. And I was stoked to see that, because it'd be so easy to fumble it. You've got characters who need personalities. And the thing about Bloodborne is your character doesn't have any personality aside from the one you give him,
mm-hmm.
him or her, because they don't really talk to people necessarily. They have no voice. The only sound that comes out of, you know, if they're being stabbed or bitten, yeah, they're going to scream. But otherwise, it's not like Skyrim or something where you're sort of fleshing out who this character is as a person. So how does it translate to comics? And the answer is carefully and slowly. And they do a good job measuring it out. About having a cast that gives you just enough information but withholds just enough that it's not breaking the feel. And the really visceral, hyper-gory action of the setting lends itself well to comics,
mm-hmm.
where you can have a dude with a giant saw blade cleaver dismember 6 or 7 mutant, furry, fanged townsfolk, and you'd be like, yeah, no, this is good. This is a good comic. It all comes together nicely, so I think they did an incredible job. And one of the things that influenced me to talk about this is that there are rumblings of a Bloodborne 2 to be revealed at E3. Who knows? I'm cautiously optimistic. No, even that's too strong. I'm cautious. But if it happens, I don't know, guys. I don't know if you'll see me for a little while.
Every time you say Bloodborne, my mind goes to Bloodbane, the old vampire game. You remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
She was it was like an early
2000s. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, shit. Sorry.
Short, red-haired girl.
Yeah, and she had like the forearm blades that came down. And yeah, that was cool.
Those were satisfying games. They sure were. Combos and the slashy and slasher dasher.
Hack and slash.
Hack and slash.
Yeah,
That's what I was looking for. We got there, didn't we?
Yeah.
All right, Bloodborne.
Yeah, I would say absolutely check out the comic. Like I said, there's not much I can say because they have to kind of make every word count. But if you're a fan of the game or just like the idea of cutting down werewolves in a disease-ridden Victorian-esque city, it's a fucking sweet comic. And the art style is just about flawless.
Sure, sure. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I did not have time to read a comic this week, as we had two episodes this past week to edit and getting ready for this panel next weekend.
Sure.
So whenever I don't have a book, I like to honor my word that we gave to Tina Fine, who's one of our Patreon founders, Patreon backers, but we call them our founders.
Indeed we do.
If you don't know that already. And talk about her comic a little bit, which I've talked about three or four times already on the show.
But it bears talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I see the downloads, and I see when new listeners come into play, you know, when we get new listeners. So I know there's a lot of people who still haven't heard about Off-Girl. But
spread the word.
I'm talking about Off-Girl today, the comic Off-Girl, which now that I'm thinking about it, we talked about Hit Girl earlier. Now we're talking about Off-Girl, and then when Sam joins us, we're going to be talking about Geek Girl.
And the Trinity is complete.
The Trinity is complete. Yeah. And boy, would I love to see all three of these on the same team. Oh my
god. Wouldn't that be wild?
What a... Oh.
You could call it something like Danger Girls.
Sexy Force.
Sexy...
Sex Man.
Sex... What the fuck?
No. Anyway, before I dig myself into a hole talking about that. What Off-Girl is, though, again, is a comic about a girl who has taken these pills to kind of repress the ability to... orgasm, because every time she does orgasm, some kind of entity flies out of her, and whoever, like whatever men are in her immediate vicinity, this entity will go through and immediately kill them. And
at least they die doing what they loved.
I guess so,
for the most part.
But
except for the bystanders,
right? In the first issue, it happened on a subway where she doesn't have pills. She can't get to her pills quick enough, and she just
kind of spontaneously,
like at the touch or
the hair trigger
of sex, could have an orgasm. And when she does, this entity comes out, and they come to find out that everyone that she has touched in her immediate vicinity will go through, because there was one gentleman left unkilled, and it was because he hadn't made any physical contact.
You're on a crowded subway train. There's not much you can do to avoid touching people.
Exactly. So what they kind of land as, it looking back like through old books and stuff, is that this demon that possesses her is a demon called Lilith, which if I remember when we talked
there's
about
a biblical
this before,
element there,
there
yep.
is a biblical element too. But you know, so now we have the first three issues. I don't know if now there probably might be more out, if not coming soon. But there's a killer in the book that they've announced called a Stiletto Killer, who's killing the unattractive women.
Hell of a name,
and,
by the way.
Yeah, and he keeps them running in their underwear on treadmills and keeps them around for his needs. And when he's done with them, he kills them and puts a pair of stiletto heels on their grave. But obviously, this is building up to where, you know, she's going to learn how to harness this power and, you know, go after this fella. At least I would imagine so.
Sure.
But the one thing that every time I open this comic that I can never get over is it's a sexy comic. And
sure.
When I say that, I mean it implies there's no nudity. There's no like
right.
full frontal nudity or anything. But there's a lot of skin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the tone the comic is drawn in and the way it's drawn, it's just a very sexy book. And I love it. It's such a good book. I think anyone that picks it up would enjoy it.
It manages not to be crass or trashy.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to get across. This isn't like, you know, you're watching sex in a comic book. It's not that at all.
I think there's tremendous merit in being able to handle a subject like this. And naturally, it's just like, this is the subject matter. It's
but
not...
the sex appeal doesn't only come from the subject matter. It comes from the art, too.
Yeah.
It comes from the story. You know, it's coming from all the elements.
In the correct way.
Yeah.
The pieces fit perfectly.
Yes. And, again, not just saying this because she's a Patreon backer. It was us gushing about this comic before we ever knew
yeah,
who
seriously.
Tina Fine was that got her to be a Patreon backer with us. So, first and foremost, I want to thank her again for being a backer
Indeed.
And supporting our show here. And I hope she's happy with the amount of support we're giving back with Off Girl, because I can't stress enough what a good book it is.
Absolutely, so, it is.
Head to offgirlcomic.com. Find her on Twitter at offgirlhero. And Mark Rahill, who I believe is the artist. That's, I am correct. Tina is the writer. Mark is the artist. You can find him on Twitter at Mark Rahill. That's R-E-I-H-I-L-L. Check it out. And now joining us, returning to the show, actually, to talk about the first issue of the second miniseries of his comic series, Geek Girl. We welcome back Sam Johnson. Thanks for being with us again, Sam.
Thank you for having me back.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We love this comic.
Yeah, we do.
A very attractive girl comes across these glasses that grant superhero powers, and thus Geek Girl being born.
It's got all things that are good.
Yes, and I'm very intrigued by what this second miniseries is offering to that series. So before I go into any more, Sam, could you just remind our listeners and some of our new listeners what Geek Girl is?
So what Geek Girl was Ruby Kay, a hot popular college chick who on a drunken whim landed a pair of super tech glasses that gave her superpowers, but due to a glitch in them, kind of messed with her head and made her super klutzy, which caused her to alienate her cool kid clique. The friend that didn't get alienated was Summer. Summer's dad's a comic geek. She's into the whole thing. She kind of put the idea of being a super into Ruby's head. Summer's studying fashion. She designed her a costume. So Summer kind of pushed Ruby into it a little bit. Ruby wouldn't have gone all superhero on our ass without Summer. And Ruby fell into a situation where the big superheroes of where they live in Maine got taken off the map by this big shot new mysterious villain Lightning Storm. Ruby had to step up and take her on. They had a kind of really severe fight to the finish, which ended with both of them on the floor and has left not knowing whether they were alive or dead. That was the end of Volume 1.
Yes, and we get to see a quick sneak peek at Volume 2. And I don't want to give anything away, so I'm going to
walk that thin line.
I'm going to walk a thin line here. I like what is happening with the series, where it seems like the main focus isn't on a particular person, but seems like it's focusing more on the mantle itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I like about the book and that was commented on in some of the reviews of the first series is it was sort of like it was almost as if Ruby was entering a pre-existing world. We had like Neon Girl, who's was the big shot resident superhero, and was on billboards and had sponsorship deals, and Pitbull the jock superhero. So there was already kind of this superhero lore in place and where they lived, and then all of that got wiped off the map by Lightning Storm. But yeah, what's going on in the first series, which we can give away because the free digital comic, which came out for free comic book day, and you can still get if you join the mailing list at geekgirlcomics.com, is Whatever Happened to Geek Girl, Whatever Happened to Ruby Kay, which reveals that. And the new miniseries follows on from that. And what happens is, as I say, at the end of the first mini, Lightning Storm and Geek Girl were not left standing. Geek Girl had been electrocuted by Lightning Storm's powers, partly because for the eagle-eyed reader will have noticed that towards the climax of the battle, Ruby's glasses came off, so she lost her super strength. So where we're coming in with the new miniseries is that Ruby's in a coma, and Summer, who was on the scene and was involved in the battle against Lightning Storm, has picked up the glasses, feeling a little bit responsible for what's happened to Ruby, because, as I say, she kind of pushed her into it to a degree. So Summer is kind of housekeeping as Geek Girl while Ruby is otherwise engaged in a hospital bed.
Now, I've got what might seem kind of like a ridiculous question, but I find superheroes, as the stories advance, they tend to gather more of their kind around them. Do you expect Geek Girl to be the central focus, you know, the mantle or the person, whatever the case may be? Or do you see yourself kind of expanding this set of powers, maybe more such items like these glasses? You could almost bring a team together.
Yeah, that's it's interesting you hit on that, because that is not I'm kind of getting way ahead if I answer that properly, but there is more going to be going on in that area. What happens, what's coming up in the second miniseries later on, is there's this guy Johnny Carlisle who's got this sort of slightly dodgy operation where he's selling all like super tech and even powers. So the ranks of the superheroes are going to be expanding as a result of that. And what we also have in the first issue is because of the damage that Lightning Storm's done, there's like a dearth in the law enforcement scene in Maine. So this has kind of left an opening for would-be super villains to step in. But in terms of an actual team, I've kind of got something in mind with that, but that's some way down the line. But we are certainly going to see, when we came in the first series, you know, there was a fairly small superhero community. But as I say, now that the superheroes have been taken off the map to some degree and the police is down, then this is, you know, it's kind of Maine is becoming a bit of a magnet for crime.
I'm glad to hear that, because I don't know if it's just me personally. I feel like I speak for a lot of people when I say I'm a sucker for team-ups.
Sure.
You know, when situations escalate.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we have in the first issue with Summer filling in as Geek Girl and being quite the rookie, Pitbull takes her under his wing and is kind of mentoring her. So we've got quite a fun team up with them, because he's like, what we see going quite early into the first issue is there's this guy, the Cad, who Pitbull's chasing, and his ability is useless against Pitbull because his ability is to fuck with girls' brains or heads rather, and Pitbull could easily take him down, but because he's trying to show Summer as Geek Girl the ropes, he's kind of, in his words, dogging it, letting the guy kind of get away from him, so that, because him and Summer are hooked up, they've got headsets which they can communicate with each other on, and he's kind of letting Summer have her chance, but Summer ain't too great at it at this stage. I mean, the opening thing, first page, is we see Summer's flying down trying to stop this mugger, and she's trying to aim it so she just knocks him into the wall without doing too much damage to him, but gets the angle wrong and smashes him through this hardware window, causing all kinds of damage, and the owner's much more concerned about that than the fact that she's stopped a mugger.
I love that stuff. It brings humanity, though, to the character.
Absolutely. Related. I think Summer is really... I'm always keen to emphasize this isn't going to be a legacy, but we're not going to see, this isn't going to be Summer forever as Geek Girl. Summer is, you know, she's doing this with the intention of looking after things in the hope that Ruby's going to be okay and we'll pick things up, but Summer is certainly not intending to do this long term. But I think she's very lovable in the role, and quite sweet in that she's got the best intentions but possibly doesn't have the skills for the job.
Sure.
I think there's something very endearing about a powerful person or someone given extraordinary power who just hasn't quite got it down yet. You can almost live vicariously through them. You think to yourself, well, that's about as well as I'd do my first go around. It's almost got like a Greatest American Hero vibe.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's yeah. been said, yeah. Yeah, and again, it comes back to, and someone else I was discussing it with, who was saying it's kind of surprising that, you know, Summer is this big superhero fan and then she's not any good at it. But again, that's kind of comes back to the origins of, you know, the glasses. Neither Ruby nor Summer, when they're wearing them, are exactly aware of quite what they're doing in the way that they're affecting them and affecting their brains. And like going back to what we were talking about, it's always been a kind of flip on the nerdy guy becomes cool superhero, because Summer and Ruby were like the cool kids, and then they've kind of become uncool as a result of these glasses and the effects of them.
Now, looking at this first issue of the second series, I mean, and maybe this is already something you're wanting to do, and maybe you've already said so publicly, but it looks like the first steps of universe building to me. Is that something you see for Geek Girl and that universe expanding into other series or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've mentioned on the show before my character Carbaccini, voodoo junkie hit woman.
Yes.
Okay, so this character so far just appeared in Halloween issues of an anthology called FX. And there's a miniseries which is not far from complete and has been not far from complete for a while. But what I've decided to do is shelve it. Because I've decided to introduce her into the Geek Girl universe first.
Because I've got a
really big idea for her in that, which actually ties into that. Not that she's going to become like part of a superhero team, far from it, but it does actually tie into the team thing you were alluding to. So the intention there is for Kara to come in the third series, and then to have Kara's mini come out at the sort of same time as that, so people will be aware of her. One of the things I enjoy about superhero comics is having that shared universe thing, like Mr. Mashup, who appeared in the first Geek Girl miniseries. Kara has faced off against him. There's like a free digital comic called Dark New Year, Carbaccini Dark New Year, which you can still get a drive through comics. And so she takes on Mr. Mashup in that, which pre-Geek Girl having the pleasure in the first mini. So yeah, I enjoy that kind of crossover thing going on.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that's a good place for the character. You don't see someone with that skill set, that origin, you know, that type of vibe about mm-hmm. them. They don't just join the Avengers. You know, it's something they've got to be in the periphery. And I think the more you enforce that kind of distance between them and other characters, the cooler they become. So I really like the idea that she's kind of skirting the edge of this setting, showing up when the timing's right, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, I'm into crossovers, but I've not wanted to do anything, you know, just for the sake of crossover.
You don't want to cheapen it in that way.
No, not at all. I mean, what happens in Geek Girl and what unfolds in this miniseries is very organic. It's, you know, the center of Geek Girl has always been the relationship between Ruby and Summer. And that's where things are really fundamental in the second series. And like, though Ruby is in a coma, she is still in it in the first issue, because what's going on with her is the other girls that had been alienated by her when she was all uncool and they didn't buy this whole powers thing, well, now that Ruby has saved Maine from Lightning Storm and is the quote unquote savior of Maine, they kind of trying to ingratiate themselves back in with her. So they're like visiting in hospital, so they're like talking to her in the hopes that she, you know, sometimes people in a coma can hear what's being said. So they're trying to basically suck up to her and turn things around, and have kind of ditched Summer now, because they feel like Summer's just trying to sort of ride on Ruby's coattails with this Geek Girl thing, which of course is the opposite of what she's doing. But that's the way they think, because they're shallow bitches.
You know, one thing I have to say is, I'm speaking for myself, and I think I've heard other people on the show say this too, is universe building is just an attractive, not gimmick, what would you call it? Just an attractive move
when doing
a series in itself.
Everyone wants to believe they're reading something meaningful that's going to stick around, that's going to evolve.
Absolutely.
Right. And, you know, I guess I the point I'm trying to make, I think in my case, was it Valiant Comics?
Yeah.
You know, none of their characters have really ever, like, screamed at me, like, been, like, attractive to me, like, made me want to go read them. But once I found out that they're all in that tight-knit universe, you know, they all play into each other, that's what drew me to it.
Yeah.
That's what made me pick up Bloodshot and all these other books. I was like, you know, this stuff isn't too bad.
They're kind of greater than the sum of their parts.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think back in the day when Valiant was around the first time, I think when they did the Unity event, that kind of took them to the next level and I think brought a lot of new people to them.
Yeah, I think it was, what was it, within the past like 4 or 5 years, like Book of Dead or
something? Book of Death was the one that really got me into it.
That's what pulled me in a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, that one had it all for me. I was down.
Yeah, but again, I mean, that spark of interest came from the simple fact that they all share that one universe.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's cool. It's fun to play with.
Exactly.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's a movie based on at least one of those characters.
Oh, that it's I couldn't tell you. Is
Ninjak,
there?
I think.
I don't know.
Slated for something. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I think pretty much every superhero book is slated at the moment.
And they're just discussed,
waiting
at least.
To see what. It's like the Han Solo scenario where, I haven't seen it yet, and I'm absolutely looking forward to seeing it. But for me, the biggest problem with it is just how quickly it's come out after the last one. I think if you had one coming out a year, I doubt it would have had the problems it's had. And I think that could be the case. Like, for example, at the moment, we've got, you know, we've just had Avengers Infinity War and Deadpool, and now we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm. And like, that's okay. But I wouldn't want another one, you know, immediately after. I think you've got to watch it a bit.
You don't want to seem overeager.
Right.
No. Because, like, I actually only went to see Deadpool 2 yesterday because I'd arranged it with a couple of friends. One was away, and then the other was away. And one of them was saying about this and that, you know, like, because she's not that bothered about seeing Han Solo. And she was saying, like, that they're just churning them out. And it's not the case. And this, as I was saying to her, it's not the case that they are just churning them out. I can see, you know, the thought and the love that's been put into the Han Solo. But when they just come out so quickly and so close together. I mean, you know, this blockbuster season has been extremely competitive, and we've got the next Jurassic World about to come out as well. So, you know, people can misunderstand, misinterpret it, that it is just, oh, let's just bang another sequel out and that kind of thing. And I really, you know, as I say, I haven't seen Han Solo yet, so I can't, you know, be completely objective about it, but my impression of it is certainly not that this has been churned out and that there has been a lot of care and thought and attention put into it.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know. The difference for me, I guess, with the Marvel movies is, you know, after we've seen Infinity War, these next movies to come are like the next progression in the bigger scheme, you know, setting up the next Avengers movie, where the Han Solo
you sort of
movie
know
is just
how
kind
it's
of like
play
a,
out.
Just a spot at a time. You do know how it's going to play out. You know, it's not really playing into the big scheme. Not to mention that the fact that, you know, the past few years, you know, Disney has really coined Star Wars a Christmas kind of thing. So then to plop one down on summer doesn't it's like leaving your tree up at past New Year's.
It's just in bad taste.
I do. I mean, it's, you know, it's impossible to say what difference it would have made had that come out at the end of this year. But my feeling is it would have made a lot of difference.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Before we get on a Star Wars tangent, which happens too much on this show.
It's standard, isn't it? It's unavoidable.
It really is. And it's always welcome, too. But we can't forget about Geek Girl. I want to tell people to go to geekgirlcomics.com. Sam, is there anywhere else we should be directing people?
If you want to get a digital copy, it's at Comixology. But geekgirlcomics.com is a good place to go right now because it's just come out. So there's all kinds of previews and interviews, and this will be going up there. And yeah, anything new gets added there at the moment because this is a kind of a buzz time for it. So that's a good place to go. And you can still get Volume 1. I mean, that's on Amazon, and there's a link to it at geekgirlcomics.com as well. So that's all you know. Although if you want to get like additional like previews and stuff, the Geek Girl Comics Facebook group is also a good one.
Well, it's a gorgeous comic. We're having a lot of fun with it.
Absolutely.
And I know our listeners would have a lot of fun as well. We love what you're doing with it as well. So keep up the good work, Sam. And again, thanks for being here with us today, man.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone. And once again, you can check out Geek Girl at geekgirlcomics.com. And Sam is on Twitter at @DaSamJohnson. That's D-A Sam Johnson.
Very important distinction.
Well, yeah, if I
not
say...
Not D-U-H Sam Johnson.
If I say the, I mean, we have to say it's at D-A, right? Come on. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with him, because I rather did. I really love the direction that this comic is going. It's going in a way that I did not expect. I just expected this to be solely about this one girl and her just single issue adventures.
I'm eager to see where it goes from here, and I think it's a safe bet we'll have him back on when it gets there.
Oh yeah, this is going to be one of those projects. We've talked a lot recently about, you know, we have creators on the show that some of which we saw toward the beginning have just kind of disappeared. We haven't heard anything from in years, and then there's others we get the privy of sitting on the sidelines and watching from concept to first printing to popularity.
They grow up so fast,
don't they? Though,
so proud, my special boys.
So another big thank you to Sam Johnson for being on the show with us today, and we hope you all enjoyed our episode. But until next time, Jake, what do we have on the website?
We've got all things that are good. We've got merchandise at society6.com /CandairePod. We've got our full catalog. It's all there for you, with the exception of the Founders Club podcast, which you can still access if you hit that $5 a month mark or more on Patreon. And don't forget, if you want to contact us, do that through the website as well. See our special guest page, where we've got some of the most prestigious names and talents we brought onto the show. And follow us on all of our social networking outlets, at CandairPod on Twitter and at @Cand_Air on Instagram. And if you are attending a Wizard World convention, promo code CandAir, just CandAir, right?
Yeah.
Promo code CandAir nets you a cool 10% off. What's the harm? Am I right?
No harm at all. Yeah. I mean, I think saving money is quite the opposite.
Kill
of harm.
The taxes on your ticket. Bam.
There you go. There you go. And again, if you are attending this Columbus Con, come see your boys Sunday at from 1:30 to 12:15 in room B241. We're going to be doing a panel and once again giving away, raffling off some prizes.
It's going to be awesome.
I think we're going to take some bookmarks out there too. You know, maybe we can just hand out some of them. I can't imagine we're going to get enough people in that room to worry about having given away all of our bookmarks.
You never know.
I would love it to be an issue. That would be awesome. So come on out, see us. And also another big thank you to Randy Hardenbrook for becoming a Patreon founder. We'd love to have you as part of the Candair
Absolutely.
Nation. Glad you're a founder, and we can't wait to start this beautiful relationship with you. So I think that's going to do it for this week. Until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jake Runyon.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
I can't wait to see this movie.
But wait, Timmy's blind.
But what am I supposed to do?
Why not try a podcast?
Spirit!
All the comic and pop culture entertainment you could want in the Candair podcast.
Finally, a form of entertainment not fully reliant on visual stimulation.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
I should really just start shutting that window, you know.
How?
I'm going to shut the window really quick. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I'm hearing too much children for my liking. Ugh.
There are sure a lot of children.
They're Cabbage Patch Kids.
They all look like Amy Schumer.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.